had landed in Hiroshima just 31 days after the Enola Gay dropped its deadly load. Virtually everyone in the street for nearly a mile around was instantly and seriously burned by the heat of the bomb, Morrison said. The hot flash burned suddenly and strangely. They told us of people who wore striped clothing upon whom the skin was burned in stripes. There were many who thought themselves lucky, who crawled out of the ruins of their homes only slightly injured, but they died anyway. They died days or weeks later from radium-like rays emitted in great numbers at the moment of the explosion. Serber described how in Nagasaki he noticed that the sides of all the telephone poles facing the explosion were charred. He followed a line of such charred poles out beyond 2 miles from ground zero. At one point, Serber recounted, I saw a horse grazing. On one side all its hair was burnt off. The other side was perfectly normal. When Serber somewhat flippantly remarked that the horse nevertheless seemed to be happily grazing, Oppenheimer scolded me for giving the impression that the bomb was a benevolent weapon. Morrison gave a formal briefing in Los Alamos on what he had seen, but he also summarized his report for a local Albuquerque radio station. We circled finely low over Hiroshima and stared in disbelief. There below was the flat level ground of what had been a city, scorched red. But no hundreds of planes had visited this town during a long night. One bomber and one bomb had, in the time it takes a rifle bullet to cross the city, turned a city of 300,000 into a burning pyre. That was the new thing. Miss Edith Warner first heard the news of Hiroshima from Kitty, who came one day to fetch fresh vegetables. Much was now explained, Warner noted afterwards.
More than one physicist felt compelled to visit the house at Otowi Bridge and explain themselves to the gentle Miss Warner.
Morrison himself wrote her of his hope that people of intelligence and goodwill everywhere can understand and share our sense of crisis. Having helped to build the weapon, Morrison and many other like-minded physicists now believe the only wise course of action left was to place international controls over all things nuclear. The scientists know, Miss Warner wrote approvingly in her Christmas letter of 1945, that they cannot go back to the laboratories leaving atomic energy in the hands of the armed forces or the statesmen. Oppenheimer knew that in some fundamental sense the Manhattan Project had achieved exactly what Robbie had feared it would achieve. It had made a weapon of mass destruction, the culmination of 3 centuries of physics. And in doing so, he thought, the project had impoverished physics, and not just in a metaphysical sense. And soon he began to disparage it as a scientific achievement. We took this tree with a lot of ripe fruit on it, Oppenheimer told a Senate committee in late 1945, and shook it hard, and out came radar and atomic bombs. The whole wartime spirit was one of frantic and rather ruthless exploitation of the known. The war had a notable effect on physics, he said. It practically stopped it. He soon came to believe that during the war we perhaps witnessed a more total cessation of true professional activity in the field of physics, even in its training, than in any other country. But the war also had focused attention on science.
As Victor Weisskopf later wrote,
the war had made it obvious by the most cruel of all arguments that science is of the most immediate and direct importance to everybody. This had changed the character of physics. At noon on Friday, September 21st, 1945, Oppenheimer went to say farewell to Henry Stimson. It was both Stimson's last day in office as Secretary of War and his 78th birthday. Oppenheimer knew that Stimson was scheduled to give a parting presentation at the White House that afternoon, in which he would advocate, very belatedly, thought Oppenheimer, the case for an open approach on the atom. By Stimson's diary account, he would bluntly tell President Truman that we should approach Russia at once with an opportunity to share on a proper quid pro quo the bomb. Robert genuinely liked and trusted the old man. He was sorry to see him leaving at such a critical juncture in the emerging debate over how to handle the atomic bomb in the post-war era. On this occasion, Oppenheimer briefed him one more time about some technical aspects of the bomb, and then Stimson asked him to accompany him to the Pentagon barbershop, where he had his thin gray hair trimmed. When it was time to go, Stimson rose from the barber's chair, shook Oppenheimer's hand, and said, "Now it is in your hands."